three ball from CG43. They're in front.
This is flat out ridiculous.
From a beautiful left hand, in and out finish, the old fashioned way.
Newell gets to the basket with one to come. From there again. You have got to be kidding me. Tyson Stiff.
Ladies and gentlemen, girls and boys, welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. My name is Joseph Corr from Stats Perform Media. I'm joined on this episode by Lucas Walker, and I'm calling this episode Lucas Walker and the Realities of Retirement. With this episode, you're going to find out what it's like for a player of Waxy's standing in the game to retire, someone of his standing within the game. Not an import, not a superstar, far from a bench player, someone in that. What's the reality of being that? And we go through the highs and the lows, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. My favorite part was when we talk about when Waxy, who I'm comfortable calling him Waxy now, I wasn't there for the creation of the nickname, but we spoke about this and I'm comfortable now. The time in which he tried to represent himself, be his own agent, and the positives and the overwhelming negatives of doing that and his experience doing it, I found that really interesting, and I hope you do too. The celebrity around sports, Waxy's writing of late. He put out some stuff on, I think, the Medium.com or at his own website, and that got a lot of traction. And that was about him and the Boomers, so we spoke about that. And then, I talked about the celebrity around sports, but we also talked about the celebrity, and I hate to use this word because it's a bit crass, but the sack-sucking around sports. That word has come back up in the NBL vernacular. And we talk about that pretty honestly. One thing I took away from this one as well is the fact that Lucas Walker now has little to do with the NBL and its clubs. And that to me is a mistake or an error or it's something that needs correction, because think about all the years you've invested into this guy, and it's 10 years in the league thereabouts and probably 20 years in the sport, perhaps even longer. And then it just comes to a bit of an end, and quite an abrupt one. Again, maybe that's not such a bad thing. Most workplaces, you leave and you never see or speak to anyone from there again. But is there a way that you... But sports is sports different? Should it be, you know, is there a way to keep players involved? And you're going to hear some stories about the Perth Wildcats compared to the other clubs that Perth Wildcat fans listening, I think, are going to get quite a big head over. Hope you enjoy it. But ladies and gentlemen, this is Lucas Walker on the realities of retirement from the NBL. Lucas Walker, you've been retired now since February 2020 or 21. Have you found it? Is that date right?
I think so, man. I haven't thought about it. I mean, I've been retired since then technically, but even longer. It's kind of blown by. There's been so much happening, I guess, that it's just sort of, it's just a fragment of my memory now.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, I think sports in general has been pushed to the background for a lot of people with COVID and what else. So you retired at a really peculiar time. Yeah, you formally announced on February 2021, but I think you were sort of aware of it long before that. I got to ask.
I made the decision a couple of months before that. Sorry to interrupt. Yeah, a few months before that, I think I knew what was coming. It just took a while to... accept it and come to terms with it. And even after, even since I've said it, I'm like, why did I do that? But, it's done now. There's been a lot of up and downs with the NBL season since the last time I played. So probably came at a good time for where I'm at in my life as far as like family and everything else is concerned.
You don't look at Tim Conrad and go, I probably could have gone down that route and just sort of kept it open, stayed. I think he's been signed for next season, you know. Do you look at him with envy, or do you look at him with like, I wouldn't want to do that ringer again?
I do. Like, obviously, just the competitor in me wants to play, and I want to prove that I can still play because I know I can still play. But it's just I'm really happy with where I'm at. Like, I love where I live. I love that my family's got a little bit of stability. My kids are in daycare and starting to make friends now. And I think it would be selfish of me to kind of up and leave for, or be looking, actively looking for something to just, you know, pack the family up and move them away again. No question. Like, if a good opportunity came along, we'd be all on board and we'd take it.
Right.
But it's just like, you know, I'm really happy with where we're at now, and it's cool. Tim's in a different situation to me. Like, he's played with this club his whole career, and he lives locally. So, you know, if the Hawks got on the phone tomorrow and wanted some help, then yeah, by all means. But there'd be a little bit more to think about if the call came from Western Australia.
Yeah, that makes sense. I got to ask, and I don't mean to pry, but like monetarily, like you talk, I was watching something on OJ Simpson the other day, and he gets, you know, a couple of hundred thou from the NFL as a pension every month. What's the NBL like retirement scheme? Like, when you retire from the NBL, do they stay in contact? Do they look up? Is that too private a question?
No, I think you get a tweet and like a 1 minute highlight package on Instagram, and then yeah, that's
I got asked then. That's funny. This is my next question. Is there a post-retirement strategy? Do the Australian Basketball Players Association reach out with introspection, counselling from that sort of friendship, I guess, standpoint?
Yep, they've been really good. So they haven't always been around. And when I first came into the league, there wasn't anything like that. So Jacob Holmes and Peter Gibbs, and now David Stiff as well. They've done an awesome job. I don't know, you know, the last couple of years I was playing, they always got around to every team, and they gave talks, and, you know, they financial services, accounting, whole range, like they help you get back into school if you want to do so. They're providing a lot of options for players who are sort of a little bit uncertain. Stiffy does a lot of stuff in the mental health space as well, so which is pretty important for a lot of guys who are sort of transitioning out of pro sports into normal life. But, you know, what they're building and what they've got now is awesome compared to what they had before.
Let's do this. You've gone back to study. What have you gone back to study, and why is my question?
Yeah, I went back to study exercise science. It was what I wanted to do at university initially when I'd finished high school. And then sort of my path took me elsewhere. I went overseas, or went to the AIS, went overseas, didn't follow that. So I didn't stick to that and do that in college. I actually got a business degree, which was still good. But, yeah, I guess it's just I'm really interested in it. A lot of stuff that's involved in the degree, I've always had an interest in. So, you know, training, a little bit of biomechanics, and basically, yeah, just wanting to help athletes. It's another opportunity to stay involved in professional sports. So not only coaching, but also in the high performance space. So, I thought now would be a good time to do it. You know, there's universities online, which gives me a lot of flexibility with my family and stuff. So, it's kind of just seemed like the right time to go back.
And that business degree from, where'd you go to college? St. Mary's.
Yep.
Does that, you know, they often joke about it in movies and that way, you know, like athletes go to college and they don't, you know, really attend classes. Did you find that fruitful? Like, could you have fallen back on that if you wanted to? Or is that a bit more of a...
Yeah, definitely. No, I did. I went to my classes and I did all my own work.
Right.
I got good grades. Actually made the honor roll a few semesters. I was good. And I think I could have fallen back on that if I wanted to, but I was lucky enough that I didn't have to. And then after playing for, you know, 10, 11 years, and then I was kind of, you know, you change as a person and what you think you're interested in.
Yeah, right.
Just, I wasn't. So I'd spent too much time away from it that I thought, nah, that's not for me anymore.
We online, on Twitter, I should say, I put out a little thing about players should represent themselves, become their own agent, and save the 12.5%. And you replied and you said, harder than it sounds, you've tried. Take me through that. So when you tried, when was it that you tried? What did you try and do, and why wasn't it successful, or why was it so difficult?
I did it for a year. So after I left Melbourne and went to Adelaide, I represented myself. And I got that contract done my first year. But it was when I was trying to sign a contract extension with Adelaide after my first year that things got, really quite difficult. So just, I guess some people are probably better at it than others. And my personality, I wasn't really good at pushing and looking like I didn't want to look like, I guess I just didn't want to rub anyone the wrong way. Cause at Adelaide, it was Joey Wright who sort of handled the negotiation. So, you know,
oh man,
I think most of the other times it's, you know, the front office, like the GM and the agent, but this situation was me directly with Joey. So it was just
your kind coach. Of like, yeah. Right.
Yeah. So it's like player and coach negotiating what it was. And it was just really difficult.
Difficult in what way? Like argumentative.
I just didn't want to push and just say like, you know, I want more or this. I just didn't feel comfortable sort of arguing to, you know, I wanted to someone to go into bat for me so I could be separated from the situation. So
yeah,
at the risk of any sort of negative feelings or sort of hostility, I was kind of removed from it. Yeah. That would be worn by someone else. So I ended up help because I just got to a point where I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like this is just, it was going nowhere and I wasn't signing anywhere. And that's when, you know, free agency came and went and I was like, yeah, and I kind of shot myself in the foot a little bit. Like I thought I was doing the right thing, but I ended up not. And that's where I got screwed and I was left without a team. So it didn't really work out too well for me.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this much. Like it was a bold move. Like you got to try new things. That's for sure. That's interesting. You say that. I thought maybe you'd been strong-armed out of it by other agents where they're like, oh, you're going to strike out on your own? Because if you're not with us, you're against us. Good luck. You know, there's also this talk about sort of handcuff contracts where because you're with an agency, they kind of get favorable deals for their clients in collaboration. I thought when you said it was difficult, maybe that sort of shenanigans was going on. But you're saying it was more the actual physical negotiation, being going against your nice guy nature is what you found difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, it was hard to kind of pick up the phone and just basically to kind of be a pest, you know, to be that squeaky wheel just wasn't really, yeah. And I thought that, you know, being in the NBL for 5 years, I was like, oh, it's pretty simple. Like my contract's not like, you know, I play in the NBL, my contract's not ridiculous. Like there's not a whole lot of complication to it. It's pretty much the standard player.
Mm.
The contracts, I was like, I can organize this. But once it just came to the sort of, you know, the pushing and the negotiating and all that sort of stuff, that was just, yeah, I just didn't feel comfortable doing that. So in hindsight, I wish I didn't do it.
Across the table, you said you dealt mainly with Joey Wright. What made him good at it? He could push, I guess.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I don't even really think that we even got to the point where there was a whole lot of back and forth. There might have been some from my end and then some back from his end. And then that was really as far as it got. And that's when it just started. It got complicated for me, or it got hard for me right off the bat, because I just knew like what needed to be done to get to where I needed to get to, and I was like, right. Oh my God, I don't even know if I can start this process. And it was just hard because, you know, Joey was obviously out recruiting players and looking for guys, and he'd sign guys, and I didn't know about it. And, as soon as I asked an agent for help, you know, within 10-15 minutes, he messaged back and said, oh, Adelaide had signed these two guys in your position. And I was like, oh, shit. See, I didn't have my finger on the pulse like that. So So, you know, I'm already sort of in the dark. That's another thing that I think helps, because the agents, you know, they know, you know, they work for an organization or an agency, and they've got contacts. So they know, obviously, who signed contracts. Like, guys sign contracts and the clubs don't release it for a month or 2 months.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So, you know, Adelaide haven't announced that they've signed anyone, but they actually have. And so that's where it was difficult for me.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess my other question is, could you do it on someone else's behalf now? Like, it's difficult looking across from your coach, but could you do, like, because I feel like I myself could argue much better on someone else's behalf than my own, especially with an employer. Because at the end of it, you go, yep, yeah, if I've hurt your feelings, I don't care, you know, and the client's still happy. So do you think you could do it on someone's behalf is my question, or it's just not for you?
I think I'd be better doing it on someone's behalf than my own. I think there's a lot, there's probably a lot more intricacies involved than what I know. I think if I was to shadow someone, like shadow an agent for a couple of months to just sort of learn the ropes, I think I'd be a lot better. I don't think it's about hurting anyone's feelings because at the end of the day, it's a business. So, you know, obviously some agents have better relationships with like front office staff than others. Sure. But yeah, I don't know. Hard one to say. I don't think I have a lot of respect for what they do and how hard it was because I tried myself. So I don't think I could just sit here and say like yeah, I'd be
awesome. Like I did. Like I did on Twitter. You wouldn't do that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, there's probably a lot to learn. You got to learn player values and there's a lot to not only just knowing and representing someone else, you have to know about everyone else to make comparisons too.
Yeah, right. Of course. No, that's a keen point. Going back to the emotional side of the retirement, did you watch last season? Did you care? Like, I'm reminded of Dennis Lilly. When Dennis Lilly left cricket, he's like, I don't care. I don't want to cheer on these guys. If it's not me pounding down the wicket, I'm not going to pat some other guy on the back. And he basically sort of threw pro cricket out. Did you watch the season? Did you enjoy it? Did you care?
Nah, I didn't. I didn't watch it. I don't think I watched one full game. I
of might NBL have basketball,
a quarter
sorry.
And a half of NBL basketball. Yeah. So maybe if a game was on, I might have watched a quarter. I might have watched a half. I never watched a full game. I didn't really care that much, to be honest.
Why do you suppose?
I had other things going on. Just wasn't my life anymore. I just didn't have any affiliation to it or connection to it. Like I wanted my friends to do well and I'd like to hear when they would win, but I didn't know who was playing who. I couldn't tell you who was on a win streak or a losing streak or who was who on the ladder. I don't know. It wasn't part of my life anymore. So I had heaps of other stuff to focus on anyway.
Yeah, you know, right. It's a crazy time
too.
Two young
kids and starting a business. And I was like, man, I'm tired. I need to go to bed. I don't have time to stay up and watch this game tonight, you know?
Yeah, it makes sense. But it wasn't out of resentment. It wasn't like, oh, I'm not watching that shit or anything like that. No, it wasn't that.
No. It wasn't from resentment. It was just had other things to do and, you know.
Do you think it's interesting? Because I heard an interview on Brad and Boddy with Dean Utoff, and he's like, I just don't have anything to do with the NBL. The people I knew are gone. The way it was has changed. I have no connection with it. What should or could the NBL be doing to make sure that older, you know, guys who are retired hang around? Because they are like guys like yourself. If you're active and engaged with the product, you're a consumer now, you know, and you've got a following and da da da. Is there anything they could or should do to kind of keep that spirit alive, you know?
Well, the Wildcats do a really good job of engaging their past players. So even they give past players a season ticket option. Huh. And even when I was still playing but left the Wildcats, I must have been transferred onto that list of past players. And so I'm playing for like Cairns. And I get an email from the Perth Wildcats saying, like, you know, we're inviting you to be a Perth Wildcats member to get these two seats. And I'm like, I play for Cairns now. I don't want those. I mean, that would be great if I was fully retired and not playing for anyone. But, you know, they do things like that. So I don't really know what other clubs do. But that's interesting. They have a really proud...
Perth do, yeah.
Yeah, really proud heritage. And they, you know, before the season, when I played there, Andrew Vlahov came in and he gave a chat on, you know, what it means to be a Wildcat. And he would present guys and new players with their jerseys. So they were really big on, like, the Wildcats culture there. I don't think I've had that. I don't think I've had that at any other club. I don't think I've had past players come in and sort of talk about what it means to play for that team or anything like that. So.
See, that strikes me as peculiar because there's so many players and all those teams that are now defunct that had really good players and really good moments, you know, like a Southeast Melbourne Magic, so on and so forth. Melbourne Tigers, for heaven's sake, you know, which are kind of around, you know, however you want to strike it. But that just seems strange to me. I want to change tact. Early August, you wrote an article for medium.com about the Boomers, Sobey, your experience. Yeah, what compelled you to write it?
I don't know. Probably just the like when the Boomers won the gold medal, the rose gold medal.
Same thing.
Yeah, I think that was like the final. That was the final thing to make me, because this has probably been something that I've wanted to get off my chest for years, man. To be honest, like it's bugged me, it's irked me, like it keeps me up at night, like it really.
And for those that may not have read the article, what is that? Sorry.
Oh, so I got cut from the world championship team in 2014, and just how I handled it was poor. Like, not as in like I didn't like
flame anyone,
hands in the air and say this is ridiculous. Why didn't I make the team? Just I went into my shell, and I played shit, and my confidence went down, and I was really depressed, and I just let my whole basketball game suffer. And I really regret it, because it took me a couple of years to kind of pull my finger out and get out of this funk and you know, find some form and make my way back to the Australian team again. But ever since sort of that squad of the Boomers got announced at 24 and Nathan Sobey wasn't in it, I got group chats with guys that still play and who haven't played. And that was, you know, something that we talked about in all of them. Like, how did Sobey not get in it? You know?
Yeah, the squad at the least. Yeah, that was brutal.
Right. You know, 2 years ago, he's on the world championship team playing for Australia. Mm-hmm. And now he's not even in the 24. So that was kind of what started it. And then I guess the success that the Boomers had all the way through. So I just thought, this is the final piece in the puzzle, I guess, yeah, to put it all together. So I thought Sobes was just such a great example. And I spoke to Sobes even before they won the bronze. Like when he got put in the squad, I said, congrats. And when he made the team, I sent him a message and said, congrats. And it was just the whole way through, I was like, man, he's doing it.
Yeah. So it was surprising.
It was good.
It was amazing to see, like, from not squad so far through, and it didn't have the best World Cup either, but you know, kept pushing on. It was a good article. What I want to say is this though: you're now doing this repping thing and a few other things and study. That article you wrote, I tracked it. I wanted to look at the social impact. It had 42 replies, 70 retweets, 391 likes. That's a lot of interaction. It would have been well read. I don't know if you got the numbers on it, but I'm assuming it would have been pretty well read. And to put that in perspective, Matt Logue, and I don't mean to pick out Matt Logue, but you know, he's just an example. He's a rock. He did an article about Ben Simmons. His article had quotes from Andrew Bogut, had a whole bunch of work behind it. Zero replies, one retweet, six likes. Was your article 65 times better? And I guess my question is, like, it was a good article, I'm not denying that, but do you feel like there's this cult of celebrity because you're a former player that would mold well to you then going into writing, media, so on and so forth?
No.
No. Flatly, no.
No, I don't. And I don't think my article is 65 times better. I probably had 7 years to think about what I was going to write, where Matt probably doesn't have that much time. And just using Matt as an example. But
as an example, yeah. We love Matt Logue.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just sort of, yeah. It's, I don't know. I don't want to write about, like, I don't want to write articles on what I think is happening in basketball. I'm not a huge fan of that. So I'm not a fan of articles that say this is how a player is feeling or this is how a player, I wouldn't want to be that guy. I wouldn't want to be tasked with the job saying, hey, write us an article this week on like why Chris Golding's in a funk for the last three games or something like that. And then I write something and then, you know, it's not true. If I was going to write anything, it would just be through personal experiences. And that's what I said in the article. I said, look, there's so many cases of resilience that come through this Boomers team, but this is the one that I can specifically relate to.
Yeah, right.
So that's why I chose to write about it. And there's a couple of other topics that I actually want to write about that I have experience with. So when I get some time coming up in the next couple of weeks, I might start putting something together and write it. But yeah.
It's interesting you say that because I just don't know where sports media is going. You know, I've got a toe in this whole thing and I look around with despair. I'm like, what are we supposed to do? What is a guy like Matt Logue supposed to do? what registers with people? What's good? Because the players are getting more and more distant. Closed off is probably a bit too strong a word, but like, what content is good? I really rack my head, especially in an NBL scape. Like, I just don't know what fans really want. Do they want really hypercritical stuff? Do they want, you know, breaking stories? Do they want just like, go team, this team won, aren't they great, cheerleading stuff? I really don't know what they want. And I'm looking to you for an answer, but I don't know if you've got one for me, but what kind of content, I suppose, are you looking for?
I'm just looking at like personal stuff.
Player centric that they've created.
Yeah, just trying to find out a little bit about the person or some individual experiences. Like you said, like, players are maybe not closed off, but they're a little bit, you know,
they got to protect themselves.
The walls are up a little bit more. So just kind of finding out what the real story is. You know how many articles there are about Ben Simmons right now and how he feels about Philadelphia, and is he going back to the Sixers, and Ben Simmons isn't calling Joel Embiid, and Ben Simmons hasn't had contact with the Sixers front office, and Ben Simmons, like, shut up. Like, can we hear from Ben and hear the real story, you know? So that's, I guess, all the guys that are on ESPN, like Stephen A. Smith and Skip Bayless and all those dudes, like, their job is to talk. Like, they're trying to get viewers. They're trying to, you know, create arguments and narratives and all this sort of stuff. I get it. But at the end of the day, I'm just like, dude, unless this person has like directly told you this is what's going on, like, you're kind of clutching at straws right now. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't, and for that reason, I just don't know where, I just think sports now becomes like a film. Like, when you go to a movie, most people have not read the review ahead of time. They haven't engaged with, they just go, sit, watch. Oh, good, we won. Oh, we lost, go home. And then maybe if you put out like a little bit of stuff on Instagram, that's totally players. But as far as news, TV shows and stuff, I just don't know how they survive. And I know that's probably not something I should be saying in the sector, but I don't know the future. I'm really, really daunted by it. But see what happens.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. See how this next article goes that I write.
Yeah,
see
exactly.
If I can break that see if I can break that personal best.
Well, that's another one I'll ask about. The celebrity of sports. So, you know, you play in the NBL, it's a big enough league. It's not AFL, it's not NBA, you know, but it's got a certain celebrity around it. When you stepped away, did you feel like you'd walked away from a vacuum? And I give the example, Roseanne, who did that TV show years ago, when she first left that show, she said when she stopped it, she just walked back into the real world. She's like, oh, I knew nothing about politics. I knew none of the wars the US had started. She didn't know about it. She'd just been in the bubble of her show. Now that you've walked away from the game, do you feel like, oh, shit, I was actually treated pretty well, or like with a bit of celebrity? Do you get that vibe? Do you know what I mean?
Nah, not too much. I do see that, like, there are some perks to being an athlete and or a current professional athlete. But I mean, not at the level that I was at. Like, I wasn't, I wasn't on this like pedestal of greatness in the NBL where everything was sort of handed to me. So I definitely benefited from some things, but like, not playing anymore hasn't made a drastic change to my life at all.
Let's go back even further. So your last game was, well, it was that COVID interrupted Perth Kings series. Really bizarre. Looking back on that decision, if you're comfortable, doesn't it now look kind of quaint? Like, now that we've seen an AFL season, or two AFL seasons, the NRL season, the decision to cut that final series short in what was your final year, are you kind of like, oh man, I wish we could have done that again? Or hindsight 2020, what do you think?
Yeah, hindsight's 2020. You don't know. Like, when that first, you know, when everything first happened, there was so much uncertainty about this. And I had a chat with my partner about this just recently. I was like, remember when COVID first came here? And we were like freaking out about, you know, are we going to breathe it in when we get in the elevator in our building? Like, oh, you know, and she was a couple of months pregnant at the time. Yeah, and so right. I wouldn't let her leave the house. I was like, no, I'll go get the groceries. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I'm going to get it by walking past someone or by touching something, or like, it was just, there was so much uncertainty about it. And now it's like, I mean, it's still super serious, but there's a whole heap more understanding about it, and we've sort of learned to deal with it and find ways around it. So yeah, hindsight. But I mean, I think go back to when they cancelled it, yeah, the same decision would still be made, I guess. I don't even know if I played in that game either, Joe.
I think you had one. You definitely played in the blowout. I think everyone played that. You got beaten by about 50 or something. You had a couple of points
in
that one.
That was the semi-final against Melbourne. Yeah.
Oh, that was the semi-final against Melbourne. You're right. Shit, did you get in?
Yeah.
Man, I'll check the references. I'll check the basketball references. Check out.
No, I did. I played against Melbourne. You know what? The last points that I scored in my NBL career, I had a fast break layup. And I didn't have a dunk all season. It was the first year I didn't have a dunk, and I had a wide open dunk, but we were down 50 and I laid it up. But my first points I ever scored in the NBL was a dunk. So I'm kind of disappointed that I didn't start with a dunk and finish with a dunk. But
if you'd known, if only you'd known. I mean,
that's it.
I talk about that series because you and Andrew Bogut and Damian Martin have all retired at the same time. But I want to talk about Bogut. You're on the same team. Now his retirement's been peculiar. I don't know.
And Kev. And Kevin
and
Lish.
Kevin what? Kevin Lish. Yeah.
I can't leave Kev out.
And I don't know if you're comfortable talking about someone else, but I mean, Andrew, you've retired at the same time. His retirement to me has seemed a little bit more. He's very vocal on the socials. His retirement's been very difficult to you. You've seemed to make the transition a little bit more. I don't know if I'm being speaking out of school, but his retirement seems very odd from a distance. Have you spoken to him since he's retired again?
Yeah, I speak to Bogues. Oh, not often, but probably, you know, once every couple of months, something will happen, or I'll see something on Twitter that he says and I'll message him privately about it, or,
yeah, right.
or just, you know, I've seen him down here in Sydney a couple of times and had a couple of chats, but nothing really, nothing too deep, you know, sort of just always lighthearted stuff. I don't go on Twitter a lot too, but I know he's very active at the moment. He's very, very disappointed in the politicians.
That's certainly one way to put it. What have I got here? Yeah, sports criticism. We've talked about that. Nothing to go there. Here's the thing. Yeah, I mean, I do. That's cult of celebrity. I around sportsmen. But you've answered it well enough. But what I find peculiar is, and this is not really a question, more of a statement, but there's a UK, she's sort of Indian UK high school student, and she invented this method for purifying water really cheaply using this concrete, and it's activated by the sun. Anyway, it'll save like 100,000 lives, maybe a million lives, you know, in the poorer countries. She's got 937 followers on Twitter. You've got 4,000. And I was going back to that celebrity of sports. Like sometimes I'll be working and I'll just think like what, especially in press conferences where it's like, you know, guys talking about giving 100%. I'm like, what, this celebrity around sports, I'm blown away by it. Your NBL is different, but even with your article, like people just lapped on that. Like you got a lot of positivity, I think primarily because of the contents, but also, you know, it's a good life being a active and even former sportsman. I don't even know if I've really got a question, but, I just want to say,
yeah, that. Well, I mean, I can comment on that still. Like it's bizarre. Cause I really don't use Twitter that much anymore. And I reckon I've probably maybe sent out 10 tweets a year for the last couple of years. Like, it's just not my, you know, I read stuff on there. A lot of stuff that I follow is just for news. So I follow CNN and BBC and Al Jazeera and all that stuff. It's just like for a really up-to-date news source for me, really. I think probably my perspective on the world has changed in recent years as well. So I don't know what the hell I was saying a couple of years ago to have that people care about what I was writing. So, yeah. It's funny because now I think if I was actually to tweet about the stuff that I cared about, which is probably the important stuff, no one would give a damn about it. But the rubbish that I used to tweet back in the day was the stuff that people lapped up. So it's weird. It's a bit backwards.
It's bizarre. I like sometimes when I miss a deadline or whatever, I'll be like, 6 million people are dead with COVID. This doesn't matter. This doesn't matter right now. But it's interesting.
And that's probably why I don't tweet anymore, because the stuff that I used to say, you know, I'll think about it now. I'll be like, I'm not going to say that. Who gives a shit about that?
Who
like,
gives a shit? It's times have changed for the better. Totally.
I read something that I read. I don't remember who said it and I don't remember where I read it, but I've remembered it ever since, and it said no one gives a shit about your own stuff more than you.
It's true. It's totally true. And you either indulge in it or you don't. And that's my last question for you. is sports insular. Like we talked about, like, I do feel like the NBL players and all players really are in their own little world. I think they've got their fans and everything, but you'll never break. You'll never truly. We saw those boomers. Let's use that as an example. Those boomers won bronze and a lot of people feel very much a part of it. But that was a medal won between, what is it, 12, 13 guys and coaches. Like that was their medal. As much as, and a lot of people went on about the history of it and stuff, and maybe you'll totally think the opposite, but everyone was like, oh, you know, doing it for like Ed Pelibinskis. I was like, Ed Pelibinskis played 50 years ago. Like, it's for the guys who are right there and now. I didn't get that vibe, but maybe you had a different reaction.
Yeah, definitely the players who won the medal, like, that's their medal. But I think the steps forward from like Ed Pelibinskis all the way through to guys who just kind of, I guess, you know, basketball is not a major sport or wasn't a major sport in this country. You know, when my dad was growing up, he told me, he's like, this pussy's played basketball. You know, you either played footy or you played rugby. You know, basketball was for guys who were soft. And so there's those guys who played that anyway, and they kind of push the sport, you know, they didn't, and they took it to another level and they pushed themselves. And that's just kind of, you know, they built the base and then people built on top of that. And then the next generation built on top of that. And then, you know, then you start getting the, you know, I can't speak before my generation, but you get the guys like, you know, they start to inspire the younger kids and you inspire the next generation, and then the next generation's a little bit better, and then the next generation's a little bit better than that, right. And so on and so on. So it's all like, it's all part of the chain, I think. And yeah, I guess without those guys, we, you know, probably wouldn't have got to where we got to. So,
and I got to ask on those boomers as well, like, and this might be a bit of a cynical question because he's quite badly hurt, but the team kind of got better when Bogut obviously retired, but also Baines went away. Like, it's kind of the first time Australia really embraced like a small ball sort of look, or maybe I'm being a bit harsh, but you know, it was like Thibault at the four. It was a really dynamic looking Australian team as opposed to even the World Cup team that, you know, occasionally you'd have Bogut and Baines on the court at the same time. Did you feel that tectonic shift once Baines was gone? I was like, oh shit, like Australia is now a really American-ish dynamic sort of team, unlike it had been in the past?
Yeah, I was definitely had a little bit of a concern because I don't think, like, you know, we didn't have a whole heap of depth at the bigs. You know, we had Bainesy and Duop Reith, who I know absolutely nothing about as well. And then Jock, and then Nick Kay. And Nick Kay is like, you know, on an international level, he'd be considered an undersized big, as good as he is and as hard as he works. But so, yeah, there was a little bit of like, oh, geez, you know, Baines is such this physical presence down there that, you know, a shot changer and a, you know, a rebounder and, you know, sets awesome screens and he can also shoot as well. So, yeah, I just think they made an awesome adaptation to go small ball, and what a privilege it was to have Matisse Thybulle as well. He was sick.
Oh, he was unbelievable.
So, yeah, it was cool. And then I guess, yeah, just sort of switched it up. Nick shot three, Jock shot three. So credit to the team for making that change on the fly mid-tournament.
Mm. I could see it coming. I think there was a bit of a missed narrative on this one. Like, I think with the Boomers team looking at it, and particularly Thybulle, like, here's a guy who wasn't that real, like, rusted on Australian boomer, Duncan. There's a guy who I don't believe had played in the country before that. Like, I think he was born in Sydney, there till the age of five, maybe less, and there was a US base player. And so the Boomers kind of transformed from this real like government run, state sanctioned kind of team to this kind of free open market where it was like, yeah, Thybulle, come in for the tournament. You've never played in anything else, but we'll take you. Like, it did seem like a real new chapter for the Boomers. And not that it was cynical to bring in Thybulle, but I did kind of feel like, oh, they're embracing a, you know, an Olympic team that's wide open and, you know, kind of getting flirty with the rules, where in the past it would have been like guys who've done, you know, 2, 3, 4 Olympics were going around again. There was more imagination. Do you think I'm right in saying that, or am I talking out my ass?
No, I don't think you're talking out your ass. But I think a lot of, like, there's a couple of teams that did that. Like, do you see Mike Toby, who played for Slovenia?
Yeah.
Like, how does that dude have a Slovenian passport, you know? So there's examples across the team. Yeah, I think it's good that they got Matisse. Like, you know, why wouldn't you? There's been guys in the past that are American have been naturalized, like Sean Redditch played for Australia.
Yeah. Lish.
Kev played for Australia. God, who was in the Boomers before that? I can't think now as I'm going to sit here and just waste time thinking about
Cal
it.
Yeah. And Ricky and all those guys. Yeah, usual names.
Right, yeah, there you go. So, yeah, I don't know. You play by the rules. It's within the rules. And, yeah, what a good pickup he was for us.
Oh, it was unreal. No, it was unreal. And I liked that they – I liked the love that they did it. I just thought it was a new – whole new chapter for the Boomers. But, man, I think that's all I've
got. He looked like he really bought in too. Sorry, man.
I loved it. He loved it.
Yeah, he did. And the, like, from like what I heard from the guys was, like, he was a legend. Like, so fun to be around and really bought in. And so that's probably what – that's probably, like, what made it so successful is, you know, he was really happy to be there, and because he was really happy to be there, they were really happy to have him, and it was just like it was just a perfect match.
Actually, last thing, repping. I want to mention that. So that is obviously on pause with the, pandemic. I'm assuming it'll come back when the pandemic's over. Or what do you want to do with it?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just it's so up in the air right now. It's. Yeah, it's obviously going to come back eventually, but I just don't know when. Like, you know, can only do one-on-ones outside at the moment. So getting back indoors to do group fitness, I guess it's the same as there's all gyms. And when they open up, who knows, you know, do we say only vaccinated people are allowed to come? Or, you know, it's just, who knows, man. So we'll put that in the, like, worry about later basket. I think we've got a bit of time up our sleeves to figure that one out.
Yeah, perfect. But when it comes up, we'll have to spruik it for you, gladly.